Today's Unseminary podcast episode is brought to you by Regal Theater Church, the only theater company providing full-service consultation for churches wanting to create dynamic worship services in familiar, culturally relevant venues, the local movie theater, with lots of parking, spacious lobbies, plenty of bathrooms, and a perfect view of the screen from a comfortable seat. Regal theaters are ideal for church plants and multi-sites. Learn more at regaltheaterchurch.com or call their incredible team at 1-800-792-8244 today.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, happy Thursday, everybody. My name's Rich, the host around these parts. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. I am so glad that you've decided to spend some time with us today. I know there's a lot going on at your church, and as you get ready for this weekend, we're just honored that you would pop yourself in, or not pop yourself, pop us in your earbuds to just listen into today's conversation. I am so honored to have Krista Hesselink with us. She is a return guest, which I think there's only been two or three people that that's happened for, and I'm so excited to have Krista back on the show. Krista, welcome.
Hello. Be nice to be here again.
I'm so glad to have you here. Krista is a longtime friend, although we're not that old, so it's not that long. But, a great leader that you really need to plug into and listen into today's conversation, because we've got some, you know, great stuff happening. She's worked both in ministry, kind of local church context, but also in some nonprofit context her entire life. She really has been a part of seeing transformation happen in her own life and in lives around her in a lot of different ways. And we're going to kind of dig into some of that today. Currently kind of her day job is she's the director of Next Generation Engagement, which is one of the fanciest titles I've heard in a long time, with a group called the Brethren in Christ in Canada. They're a fantastic denomination. Krista, why don't you tell us, kind of give us a bit of a nugget of your story. Give us a bit of this story here, which I know is a lot, so just a little nugget.
Well, sure. Like you said, I've been in a ministry context my entire life, right out of school, actually, university. I went to Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and became sort of a youth pastor in a church in Rochester, New York. Mm-hmm. And when I was 24, my life took a really dramatic turn. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I sort of went into that season thinking, oh, this is going to be hard, but I am going to have a great story at the end of this, and I'll be better for it. And I went into that time. It was obviously incredibly challenging, just chemo and radiation and sort of living on my own. But right in the middle of that time, my brother, my only sibling, was killed in a car accident. Hmm. So I know it's a little bit of a shock to people who are just like tuning in, because I get right there. That's a defining moment in my whole life. I mean, I sort of see my whole life as before April 7th, 1999, and after. Hmm. And it was a beginning of an incredibly difficult, lonely, long spiritual journey into the darkness. Hmm. I think, obviously, it's incredibly traumatic to lose your only sibling, who I was very close to. His name was Todd. But what was probably more difficult was just the deep sense of abandonment I felt from God at the time. And I actually thought my life was completely over. I mean, my whole life was defined by my faith in Christ, my job, my friends, and I just wasn't sure I was going to be able to continue. So it was a long journey of sort of deconstructing a lot of things and reconstructing a lot of things. And now, 17 years later, you know, I have, I can reflect back on an incredible transformation in my own life, from literally face down in the death zone, physically, emotionally, spiritually, to this rebirth of joy and gratitude and abundance, really. And so, that's a long, long journey. That's like the 17 years in a nutshell. But, you know, that's my own story. But when you talked about at the beginning, in the intro, just about witnessing other people's transformation, you know, a couple of years ago when I was on the podcast, I was talking about my work in sort of global outreach and compassion engagement ministries, and obviously the incredible transformative work that I would see from sort of development agencies on the ground and the transformation of people's lives from really face down in the death zone in really dramatic ways to this sort of rebirth, not only in physical ways, but also just community transformation. And then being a pastor for 10 years, you know, your listeners know this. How many times do we sit across from people? And really the heart of it is, I just want to see some change in my life. It could be I'm struggling in my marriage, or I'm really lonely, or I want to grow closer to Jesus. It's like there is this, I'm here and I want to go here. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about transformation, but it really was motivated by my own experience of just the miraculous, slow, transformative work of God in my life.
Well, I don't want to leave that. Let's lean in here a little bit.
Sure.
You know, I think a lot of people in this, faced with the situation that you were faced with 17 years ago, would have been easier, very easy, to go bitter rather than better. And I'm sure there were long moments in there that were, you know, were filled with darkness. Let's talk a little bit about that. What part did you play in the transformation that happened in your life? And then what part did God play in that transformation?
Yeah. And let me just say right out of the gate, like this is really hard. I would not have been able to have this conversation, and I certainly wouldn't have been able to identify the answers to that question right in the throes of the pit.
Yes. And
quite frankly, even a few years later, you know, you don't really realize what's happening until you look back. I think in our culture, when we think about like personal life change and transformation, I mean, honestly, if you Google transformation, you will see images of people who are flabby to, you know, six pack ab all stars. And so we it's like it's what we have to do. And you know, self-help books, that's the whole point. It's like you change yourself. When it comes to, I think, really significant life change, it is an interior thing. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we partner and remain open to with God, but it is the work of God in our life. And I think it's unique for everyone in terms of how they would identify, like, what part did you play? What part did God play? You know, there are some key moments where, you know, I would say there was these sort of very unique supernatural zings and, you know, like less than five, you know, I can count them on one hand, over the last 10 and 15 years. But, you know, you look back and you realize the timing of conversations. You look back and you see the people that were in your life. And I feel like there was just an enormous amount of grace given to me by God, as he would for anyone, to not let go of me so that I couldn't let go of the idea of God, even though I was completely willing to just walk away. I remember saying, if this is not, like, I can't do this. Like, my my idea of God is not working for me. So I have to leave it all behind. And in a sense, I did actually leave it all behind. But what was rebuilt and rebirthed in me was a new and more comprehensive and thorough and robust and beautiful understanding of who God is. And so in that process, you know, I've written this book, so I've developed, it's not necessarily unique, but it's certainly my own sort of rubric of what is transformation. And I sort of see it as sort of eight progressive interweaving steps, I guess you could say. I don't know if you want me to go through those.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we jump there, you know, I think I just want to highlight one thing you said. Increasingly, as I talk with church leaders about kind of what's next, faith next, I think there is a sense that we've kind of come to the end of something, right? That we've come to the end of, in this case, you're talking about your own personal transformation. You're talking about coming to kind of the end of your faith. And even I liked when you said there, you know, I kind of did walk away from it all.
Yeah.
But found something new on the other side of that, that in some way connected back to, you know, what had always been there. Can you talk a little bit about that when you talk about kind of walking away from, what were those pieces that you feel like you walked away from? And what did you, what did you find on the other side of that experience? And then we can jump into the, you know, the framework.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. Well, quite honestly, I think I was raised in a Christian understanding of who God was that didn't really allow for pain. So it wasn't necessarily, I wouldn't be able to point to a sermon specifically, but it was just the culture that for me, I sort of intuited at 25 years of age, the presence of pain means the absence of God, because I'm supposed to feel comfort in suffering and joy amidst suffering. And I was not feeling comfort or joy. I was in deep, deep grief and disillusionment and confusion and sadness and fear and anxiety. And that did not feel like comfort. That did not feel like peace. That did not feel like joy. And so for me, I mean, I can chalk it up to a naive sort of the naivety of youth, but I think the church hasn't always done a great job of helping us understand that, you know, about just about grief and mourning and just sort of being willing to let the sovereignty of God not be put on trial just because people are in a really bad way. So for me, I had to walk that idea fit with, I couldn't actually have that understanding of God. So I felt like I walked away from that more maybe simple approach to thinking that, you know, the absence of pain means the presence of God, the presence of pain means the absence of God in my own life in a very personal way. And it sort of opened me up to really understanding lament and grief. I think, you know, to be quite honest, this is something I'm still learning, but I think that when God is transforming us, whether it's from a real tragedy, you know, like you want to move out of the pit to something different, something better, but even just in our own sort of life transformation, we want to be a better version of ourselves. We want to become more like Jesus. I think that we have often thought that God was changing us so that we would become more perfect in his eyes so he could love us more. And I wonder actually if God is in the business of transformation because he wants us to experience his love more perfectly.
Oh, that's good.
Like that to me is, that's the essence of the whole book. Like that to me is so key. It's like, what if God wasn't changing me to be more perfect so that he could love me more, but he was changing me so I could actually experience his love more perfectly, this abundance. Transformation is actually motivated by his love, and it always leads to more love, more abundance. And I can step into that. I can grab onto that.
Very cool. Well, why don't we talk through, you know, a bit of the framework. Obviously, at the end of the day, I want people to pick up your book, but why don't you give us kind of a sense of, you know, what you're talking about?
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, I started about 3 years ago with no intention of writing a book. I just felt like it was time for me to write my story down. And I went away and I took about 3 days and I sort of just wrote my story down. And I had been journaling my whole life, but never aspired to write a book. and when I did, I really enjoyed the process. And I went away again about 5 months later for about a week just to sort of muse on some of these things that I had been thinking about as I was writing my story down. And really this framework poured out of me. And that's when I thought, oh, I might be a book here. It might just be for me. Anyways, so basically the book that I've written is a way for people to sort of step into this conversation about transformation. It's illustrated with some of my own stories, but it's really a conversation about transformation. So the framework I would say that I've pulled together is 8 stages. It starts with love. And it ends with love. Just like I said, our transformation is motivated because of God's great love for us. But the process of our transformation always leads to more love for ourselves, for God, for others. But in between, there's some, I think, interesting things to think about when we think about transformation that I see everywhere. When I think about transformation, whether I look at babies who are growing, I look at the seasons outside, business culture and transformation. And these things, I think, remain true. So here it is. Obviously, we need to remain open. The posture of being willing to be transformed, I think, is really key. And I've had situations in my life where I'm like, I know I want to become more whole in that area, but I'm not really open to like the process of transformation because I know it's going to probably require some effort and it's not going to be easy. And so I think the open posture, you know, one of the stories I share in the book around this is I used to be a camp counselor many years ago at a camp. in Pennsylvania, and I was whitewater rafting, guiding a bunch of kids down the river. And, you know, if anyone's ever whitewater rafted, you know that you you need to lean into big boulders jetting out of the rapids in order to actually make it through the rapid. But it, you know, leaning into something that seems like it will bring you to ruin is very counterintuitive. But the transformation is like that. You have to be open to sort of leaning in. So when you do that, I believe that that next step is the sense of surrender. Anytime we are invited to be transformed in our life, we have to sort of unfurl our hands on the things that we like to control.
Oh, man. You're talking to pastors. That's hard to do.
Oh, man. It's the hardest thing to do. And, you know, and to be quite honest, when I'm sort of on this side of reflecting on some of the things I've written, and even not in the same pastoral role that I've been in for about the 8 years previous, I am like, oh, man, I regret some of my approaches.
Yes,
because I really like to control. I mean, I like to have control, and I like to be the authority, and I like to know what's happening here. But to be quite honest, in order to become more whole, in order to step into this life of more abundance that God has for us, we have to surrender the things that we that bring us some satisfaction and some security and some significance. And we see this actually modeled, obviously, in Christ when he's tempted. In the 40 days, I mean, what he is being invited to is to grab onto significance, grab onto security, grab onto satisfaction. And when he's tempted and he's like, no, I surrender all that to something greater. But when you surrender, you step into vulnerability. So, you know.
Now, tell me about vulnerability here. So is this being vulnerable, obviously, in your relationship with the Lord, with other people? What is that? What does that look like? How is that, you know, how is that a part of the process?
Well, I think what you're most, what you're surrendering into is the vulnerability of being uncomfortable with letting go of your control. So that's going to be different for whatever it is. You know, when I think about, you know, when I think about transformations in my own life, specifically, I'll use a ministry example. So I am a single woman. I'm 41. And in my mid-30s, after I had been in a relationship that I thought I was going to get married and it sort of ended, I mean, I was lonely and I worked hard. I overworked because I did not want, I didn't want to feel lonely. And in ministry, you can do that. You can work really hard.
Absolutely. You get rewarded for it.
Of course you do. You know, and you, even there's internal rewards. You know, it's not just like people think you're great, but, you know, you feel like you're doing the Lord's work.
Because you're helping people. Absolutely.
So I worked really hard. And I remember getting to about 36 years old and thinking, I hate my life. I have nothing to talk about other than my work. And I remember the transformation I wanted to see happen in my life was to embrace a rhythm of Sabbath. So I had to surrender all the things that I had control over in my, you know, and obviously this takes time and lots of time, prayer, people supporting you. But this, the vulnerability that I felt by being really honest with how I was feeling, that I was actually working because I was lonely, that's the vulnerability I had to feel. So you see the answer there?
Absolutely.
So vulnerability to me, it has the ability to feel quite exhilarating, but exhilaration, the definition is like terrifying and and exciting all at the same time.
Right.
You know, my closest, most visceral example of that is bungee jumping. So I did that in South Africa once and it was the most amazing experience, but it was definitely a feeling of vulnerability.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyways, vulnerability. So when you're surrendering yourself to the vulnerability, what you're really surrendering yourself is bringing yourself to a place of what is that something must die. So something must die in order for something to be reborn. That's the equation.
There has to be a death if there's going to be a resurrection.
Absolutely. And we have just come through this beautiful church season of Lent and Easter where we spend time thinking about that, right? It's like we are in the rebirth zone, we are in the resurrection zone, and that leads to freedom. And the freedom always leads to more love. But the truth is when any time there is a transformation in our life, there is a death. And And so we need to consider, even at the beginning, when we say, I want to be open to becoming more whole, I want to be open to God transforming me, we have to know that we're signing up for something to die. I think that's why Jesus talks about coming to the end of yourself and losing your life so that you're going to gain it. I mean, that is that is in essence what we're talking about here. What must die in order for something to be born? So anxiety must die for, and fear must die for joy to be born, and selfishness must die for compassion to be born, and, you know, you name it. And so love leads to our openness to surrender into vulnerability to the death of something so that something can be reborn. Rebirth is that next stage. And to me, what I've learned about that process of rebirth, and that I spent a little bit of time writing about, is it's a very fragile place, you know? Coming to a new normal, coming to a new place post-death is awesome, but it feels precariously fragile because you're like, I know the old habit. I know the old way of doing it. I'm a little bit, I'm just aware, you know, of stepping into that. So, but it's a beautiful place, and I think it can be an incredible invitation to a new freedom that we've never experienced before.
Well, this is incredible. I hope you're leaning in at, and listening, you know, today, church leaders. And, you know, we haven't even talked about, we just jumped into the content. We didn't even talk about what the title of your book is. What is the title of it? You know, if people want to connect, it's called Life's Great Dare.
I have it right here.
Oh, and you have a copy. You know, I have to admit something here. I feel a little bit bad saying this. So Krista sent me a copy of the book ahead of time, which was great. I had an opportunity to read it ahead of time. Fantastic. But then she sent me a completed book, which was nice. And I actually was going to hold it up today here, but I gave it away to a friend last night who, you know, and I just feel like, man, this would be a great resource, a great, you know, really speak to this, you know, this person's story where they're at right now. And that's really what our hope is. Why did you write the book? Let's talk, kind of pivot a little bit out of the content into just the process itself. Why would you decide to write a book? Or do you want to become a millionaire? Is that what you're trying to do here?
Yes. That's my teacher goal.
Not at all.
Well, so the book is called, can you see it? Because I can't see you. So it's called Life's Great Dare, Risking It All for the Abundant Life. Hey, and just so people know, because, you know, this is sort of secret stuff. People think this is me. This is not me. This is two stock images of Photoshopped on top of another.
You're giving away your secrets here.
Oh, there's
a great image on the front of the book.
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Anyways.
So, okay. So like I said earlier, I wasn't planning on writing a book at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I felt incredibly insecure almost up until I saw it physically.
Yes.
that I could write.
Right.
So it became clear to me that I wanted to write a book after a few months of getting into it, but I wasn't sure if anyone was going to read it. I wasn't even sure if I was going to publish it. So why did I write the book? It sort of came out of me. But what I realized is that there's something, this message here has essentially saved my life. when I know that I'm always wanting to become a better version of myself. I always want to become more healed and more whole. And who doesn't want more abundance in their life? You know, more, when I say abundance, I mean just this love and peace and joy that we're created for. So I kind of am always on the lookout for that. But I realized it only comes through the work of transformation of God in my life. So as I was writing, I thought, well, this has been helpful for me. I'm just desperately hopeful that it's helpful for others. So that's why I wrote the book. But I self-published. So it's been this amazing experience of learning top to bottom. What does it mean to write and edit and hire people to design and print the book? And it's been a lovely experience for me.
Nice. Very cool. Now,
I'm not trying to make $1 million because I'm actually giving 100% of the proceeds away.
Yeah. Let's underline that. That's kind of part of where I was leading. You're deciding to give 100% of the proceeds away to something called Love to Love Project. You know, what is that? You know, what are you giving the proceeds away to?
Yes. Okay. Well, the Love to Love Project is something that I have developed. And it really plays on the theme of the book, that transformation starts with love and it ends to love, love to love. And the truth is, we all love to love, don't we? I mean, we all love to love.
Very good,
So for me, as people are buying the book and reading the book, my hope is that people are invited into this work of transformation. And as they are transformed, it just leads to more love. And for me, I can't think of a better way of tangibly showing our love than supporting some of the world's most vulnerable people. And my experience in ministry has been this beautiful opportunity to travel. Mm-hmm. It's mostly to Southern Africa. I've been to a few other places with World Vision around the world. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of being able to share the proceeds of this book. So there's two projects specifically. Mm-hmm. I'm working with World Vision mm-hmm. and the Syrian Refugee Response. Mm-hmm. And I'm also working with an organization called Mennonite Central Committee, who mm-hmm. I've seen their work in Southern Africa for many years. Mm-hmm. And there's a specific girls' home in Mozambique, mm-hmm. Mashanga Girls' Home. And so the proceeds of Life's Great Dare is going to those two projects. And I couldn't be more thrilled. I mean, it means obviously a little bit more administrative work, and it means obviously, you know, working hard financially to make mm-hmm. a way. But mm-hmm. I love this. This mm-hmm. to me feels really exciting. I walked the Camino about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. and I had this thought. I was turning 40, mm-hmm. and I thought, wouldn't it be? I have never said this out loud, actually, publicly. So
Fresh content.
I said, you know, wouldn't it be cool if I could raise $500,000 before I turn 50 to give away somehow?
That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm sort of motivated by big goals like that, mm-hmm. and I have no idea if it will happen, but at least that's the horizon I'm walking towards. So mm-hmm. even if it's $100,000 that I am able to raise and give away.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay.
So for 10 years, so that's $50,000 a year. That's ridiculous and very, very hard, but I'm excited to try. So Life's Great Dare, that's a part of it, and I'm thrilled.
Well, I would really love, leaders who are listening in today. We're going to give away three copies of this book, but this is what I want you to do. So I really want you to have Krista come and talk to your community. Whether it's a Sunday morning, maybe there's like a, I'm sure you've got lots of environments at your church where you could have Krista come and plug in. I would love to do that. And this is what I want to do. If you go to unseminary.com/hearKrista, I'm going to give away there's a little quick form there. I'm going to mail out to you the first three people who say, I'd like to get more information. You're not committing to having Krista come, but you're just saying, I'd like to get more information. I really do think Krista would be a perfect kind of guest speaker. You know, we're coming up to the summer and fall season. You probably have some open time slots on a Sunday. Krista would be perfect to come share some of her stories around, her own personal life change. It would be an encouragement, to your community and ultimately, hopefully get people to purchase some books. I think you're also doing a book kind of club this summer as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. In July, I'm going to do an online book club Bible study mm-hmm. for anyone who wants to participate. The denomination that I'm a part of in Canada, they've already signed up and they're buying 600 copies, and we're doing a huge book club for our whole denomination. And very I'm thinking, cool. Let's just open this up to everybody. Mm-hmm. So I've got actually right now I've got 5 groups from all over Canada and the U.S. mm-hmm. helping me shape and form this book study book club for the month of July. So people will be able to follow along and track along, participate on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited for more people to just be able to process some of the ideas in the book. And what I'm hoping is that there will be maybe some communities, church communities, mm-hmm. Different sort of maybe groups mm-hmm. who are looking to have a little bit more of an in-depth conversation in the following ministry year, in the mm-hmm. fall and into the spring, mm-hmm. that I would be able to come and share. I'd like to do retreats and workshops and preach on Sunday mornings. Fantastic. And so hopefully there'll be some interest there.
Great. So like I say, you're going to want to go now. We're going to give these books away for free. Go to the website. We'll also have a link in the show notes for more information about that. Krista, I've really appreciated you being on the show today. This has been fantastic. If people want to get more information about you or about the book, how can they do that?
Yeah. So my website is called lifesgreatdare.com. Mm-hmm. So you can go there. And that's where you can find me then on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. All the links are right on the website, lifesgreatdare.com. The book is available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's going to be coming out in Kindle a little bit later. Mm-hmm. You can go to Smashwords and get the ebook now. And, you know, like I said, I'm self-publishing, so I'm learning this whole the publishing thing. But lifesgreatdare.com and amazon.com, you'll be able to find everything you need.
Thanks so much, Krista. Really appreciate you being on the show and sharing a bit of your journey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.